Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Driving Mall Show. Hi, I'm Paul and I'll be your host this evening. Hopefully I'll be joined by Bell, but I'm having some technical issues with him, and also Stephen Harris joining us later on in the show. But before we head into the show, a couple of things we'll be covering off in the show today. We'll have a chat about red cards, obviously, because let's be honest, we have got the Corabetti incident to talk about. There's some club rugby to talk about, which we'll probably try and hold that until Mr. Harris gets on in the second half of the show. The Lions tests start this weekend, and also the Farrow Palmer Cup kicked off last weekend, so we'll have a little bit of a chat about that as well. There's also a bit of World Cup qualification to talk about, so we'll touch on that one. And as I said, joining me, assuming that he has a good microphone now, I've got Tom Boa. How are you doing, sir?
Very well, thank you. I hope everyone is well. I hope everyone is safe. And what a action-packed, eventful weekend we had. We had cards, we had more cards, and we had reversals, and with some great club rugby, I have to admit, from right around the country. So, it's been a great weekend and great to be back on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for being back. Folks, if you are interested in your club rugby and you think that Ray Robinson's disco dancing is good, then head over to the New Zealand Sports Radio Facebook page. We've got a fun video of the Western Sharks, head coach, doing a razor. He said he would do it and then tried to get out of it, but in the end was forced into it. So, yes, see him spinning around on the floor. And, a surprise addition. We've got Ashwin. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, not too bad. Just had to quick dash home after the old boxing fitness class and fight over the showers.
So two fights, one at the boxing and one at the shower. Jeez.
Yeah, exactly.
He's all battered and bruised now.
And luckily, I went to judiciary and I didn't get any more further suspensions.
Well, that's good. That's good. I mean, obviously, yes, those punching people in the head is perfectly legal, apparently. But there we go. Seems fine with that one there. Good evening, Simon. Good to have you joining us. Okay, folks, you can join us on Facebook and YouTube, and Twitter, actually, and give us comments. Join the show at 8 p.m. every Tuesday, or you can, the other option is to listen to the podcast on New Zealand Sports Radio. I guess we should probably cover off on some international rugby that's happened this weekend. Look, I had a bit of a big night on Friday night. okay. More than a bit of a big night on Friday night. That meant that basically I wasn't used to man nor beast for the next 2 days until Monday. So I've not actually, and then I was working Monday. So I've not seen much international rugby. I mean, I did watch some of the All Blacks versus Fiji, but my recollection isn't great. I caught a couple of glimpses of the Australia, the France game as well. But again, I didn't manage to survive or stay awake through to the end of that game. But let's start off with the All Blacks against Fiji. I mean, another good win. The Fiji missing their captain coming to this one. not the same intensity from them as there was the previous weekend. Ashwin, didn't quite
I think what it was is that you could argue that actually the All Blacks bought better intensity than they did in the first week. And obviously that sort of had an impact on Fiji. And for some reason, I mean, like, obviously, some right. So there was, I thought early on there was good intensity. I mean, you know, Fiji put the first points on the board with the penalty. And I mean, they thought, hey, here we go. Because, you know, very early minutes, but All Blacks weren't really achieving much. And then the first touches that Fiji had, they broke the All Blacks open. But as I said, the All Blacks definitely had a better level of intensity. But something strange happened, I suppose, in that second half. And really, it became a nothing game with about 20 minutes left. Yeah. It's sort of like, the intensity of the whole game seems to have been gone with the last 20.
For my mind, actually, I kind of gave up on the game sort of mentally when we had the yellow card for Fiji, where Fiji get warned about the yellow card, about their repeated infringements, get told to go have a talk, and don't really get set properly. They take the All Blacks take a quick penalty, off they go and score, and also even though a penalty is not given because they score under advantage, one of the Fiji players is yellow carded, which I've not seen before, or you very rarely see that if it's advantage and someone goes on to score, normally you don't get that yellow card. So at that point, it's kind of like, okay, yeah, this is a bit of a waste of time.
No, I disagree with you there. I think we're starting, okay. This is something we've actually, you know, we go back a while, and one of the things that used to upset us quite a bit, I mean, we're talking across all games, not any specific, but was when, next man goes to the bin, right? And so, right, the team goes for a line out because it's usually a line out they go for advantage and they play on and they score a try. Well, hang on, you gave advantage because they infringed again and the team scored. So technically, yeah, there should be a yellow card because they've infringed again. You know, what you're letting them off the hook because they scored, which the commentators always relate to. He's dodged a bullet there because they scored a try, so they won't get back for the yellow card. So actually, it is something that we have discussed in the past. And they have actually now following through on is the fact is that just because they've scored doesn't mean that you get off, with your infringement, which is right, I believe.
But is it something they're following through on, or is this a one-off call that we won't see again?
No, I've seen it a few times now over multiple games where even after the team has scored the try, a subsequent yellow card has come out as well.
Boa, have you heard of that? The change in that? What's the word I get? Interpretation for the referees?
There's no change. It's always been like that. It's just that the referees haven't actually enforced it, or the lack of enforcing, or let me use the word incompetence. This is something which has been discussed a number of times at World Rugby Educator forums. I'm a World Rugby Educator, and you know, once a year, all educators congregate, both from referees and coaches, and we discuss these matters. And this has been brought up a number of times. So, just to add to that, I think the yellow card was the correct decision. In fact, I thought the yellow card could have come a lot earlier, where there were some very cynical, very very cynical infringements. And this weekend, I have to say, the weekend past, the referee actually got the breakdown analysis and policing of it spot on. Because what Fiji were doing is, it's this thing called lay and pray. So you can imagine someone laying down and praying. They don't
not support
their
Christians.
Own body. Not because they're Christian. Nothing to do with religion. This is a bit of a street smart rugby term we coaches come up with, lay and pray. They use it in mixed martial arts as well. What happens is they get very low. The center of gravity is very low. They get into this really nice jackalope position. But what they're actually doing is one of their knees or the thigh area is supporting onto the tackled player. It's something very difficult to pick. So kudos to the referee. He's done his homework. And he picked that up very well. And soon as the referee, I think it was in the 26th minute, he said, tackler, clear release. Soon as those words were uttered, it became a different ball game. because once the ruck was policed in a legal, legitimate manner, it became a no contest. Why? Because Fiji couldn't keep up with that pace. And also, I think it was Nocturnal was highlighting the clean out was really good. Yeah, absolutely. You could see the All Black cleaners were right there. As soon as the ball carrier went down to the deck, we had numbers over and bang, it was lightning fast. It's what we call LQB, lightning quick ball, game over.
It's, you know, it's something that we've talked about quite a lot on this show is the commentators and how they impact the knowledge of the rugby public out there, right? And they do not help the situation. We go back a week and I think it was Ben O'Keefe that was the ref in the first test. It was like, hey, look, I can't favour the All Blacks. I'll look like a hometown ref. Because at the end of the day, the commentators raving over Johnny Dyer's performance. But the reality is, if you analyze what he's doing, he's going past the ball. His hand's going to the ground. He's not supporting his own body weight. It's happening every single ruck. Unfortunately, the All Blacks didn't deal with it, and they didn't clean him out. Referee wasn't helping. Go forward to the second test, and you've got Dickinson out of Australia. There's no bias here now. Now he's pinging them because basically they're sealing the ball off every time. And that's what they weren't. They didn't get away with the second time. And that's where I think some of that enthusiasm, let's call it, from the Fijians got sucked out of them because at the end of the day, they started getting called for doing illegal activities at the ruck, which they got away with the week before.
Same thing happened last year with the Lost Pumas, you know, that first defeat they suffered, the All Blacks. If you look at most of those jackal, those turnovers the Pumas were affecting, they weren't supporting their own body weight. As soon as we, you know, fast forward to the return game, the breakdown started to be policed in a much, much better way. They just couldn't contest. And one thing I have to say is, if you look at the All Blacks, they use a method or a tactical zero ruck. What that means is they don't contest the opponent's breakdown. That's why the All Blacks don't give up as many obvious penalties. I have to say obvious penalties at the breakdown because they tend to stay on their feet and fan out. Because I've had a number of questions over the last few weeks. A few of my coaches asking me this question. The reason is the All Blacks are more disciplined at the breakdown, whereas most other teams are not. And Fiji happened to be one of them.
Dr. Wright's also mentioned about Aris Vale. Look, both sides, every team or every player will have a go at not supporting the body weight, thinking get away with it. So yes, and sometimes they'll get away with it, sometimes they won't. That's certainly kind of happens.
I suppose, just in response, I mean, you know, if you've got one guy in your team that does it now every now and then, you're probably going to get away with it. But when you've got your team, the whole team, doing it consistently, it sticks out, and now you're not being an individual pinged. It's your team. That's the way that you're playing, and the whole team is every time they go into the ruck is getting pinged. So I suppose, you know, someone like Ari Savé, absolutely. I mean, like, you know, you go back into Super Rugby. I mean, Du Plessis Corifi and his incorrect entries into a ruck, and this is like, you get away with it, and then you get picked up and you're stuffed, right? So Ari Savé, if he does it too often, he gets picked up too often. He's going to get pinged every time. Then he's in trouble.
So all right, look, in the end, comfortable victory for the All Blacks. I think as we probably were expecting. Yes, we're seeing Stephen Harris join the green room and keep leaving the green room. So we'll try and bring him in when he's there and when there's a break.
When he stays there.
I guess the other thing we should probably talk about is the All Blacks have named their the Rugby Championship test squad in this one. Turner Wright's playing it. Kieran Reid mentioned how good Sevilla and Jacobson were, but not Ione. Akiri, yeah, look, I think Frizzell is better. I think Akiri gave away a couple of obvious penalties, and yeah, we'll see how we'll see how long his or how he goes as an All Black.
Look, I need to look. I mean, yeah, look, he gave away a couple of obvious penalties, but it was really disappointing. Again, the influence of the commentators again, and that's a good example. Why aren't we talking about George Bauer? George Bauer gave away two silly penalties to start the game. You know, and now we're picking, and now hang on, Kiri Ioane gave away two penalties. It's like, hang on. It's just like, because the commentators mentioned the fact that Akira Ioane had given away two penalties.
That's why. So the massive influence we have of our viewing from the commentators and the view that we take away.
True. But George Barrow, one of the things that has happened, though, with those two penalties is he's no longer in the All Black squad.
I think it was very much a temp, you know, when you're, you know, a few years back I had a business where I had a receptionist who, used to regularly call in sick. So I used to bring up a temp agency. So I think that was George Barrow. But I have to say, apart from those two penalties, he did had a decent outing. He was very visible, particularly in the ruck cleanouts. So I looked at his statistics, is hitting those attacking rucks and also getting into those defensive rucks. Overall, I think everyone pretty much had a decent game. And the good thing is it felt like the All Blacks were really in control. And when they wanted to crank up the pace, they did. And when they did, you know, Fiji, I have to say, they had a very good rush. A blitz defensive line, and they did that very consistently, but they just couldn't keep pace. And the best example of that was that little flick pass by Habili. When he hit the line at pace, there were three defenders converging on him at lightning speed. None of them laid a finger on him. That's how clinical and skilled this All Black side was in full flight.
I reckon we found that, there's been question marks over the All Blacks midfield pairing, right? I think a few more games with those two there and we've found our All Black pairing for the midfield.
Yeah, look, 51 carry meters off of first base. So every time he touched the ball, and I think he had something like 13 carries, 51 meters, that's a phenomenal numbers. So well done to the young man. Only 88 kilograms. And boy, whenever he hit that ball at base, he was just busting the gain line at will. So fantastic outing. And I think, we found our 12.
I think 12 and then ALB at 13. And I think it's pretty much, they have another couple of good games. It's done and dusted. There we go. We've been looking for a few years.
So David Havili at 12. Yeah, I mean, it's we've been looking for a good 12 for a while. Let's just run through that that All Black squad then. So we've got Amua, Coles and Taylor, the hookers. As expected, Samisoni Tokelahi obviously has had his 20 minutes. And I know Stephen Harris is a little bit concerned that perhaps he will see if he gets if and when he gets more game time. And obviously now he's not available for the island of his birth from Sugarlands.
Unless he goes to play for them for sevens and then comes and plays for them again in 15s.
Only in a World Cup year playing for sevens. But yes, you're right, which we have had a few players do this year. Amongst the props, then Lualala, Lomax, Moody, Ta'avo, Tonga Kaffi, and Tonga Fassi. So as we said, no George Bauer and also no Ethan de Groot as well. So he's rushing back to get back into MPC for that one. Any particular, stop me when you think that we've got a something that's a surprise or worth or needs talking about. But I think I don't think there's any big surprises in that section or in the locks for that matter, with Barrett, Ritalik, Tuopolotu, Va'ai and Sam Whitelock. The only point I guess we should say here is that Tuopolotu is apparently taking a sabbatical next year from Super Rugby and will be up in Japan. So we'll see that one. So obviously that'd be a big loss for Arsene's Blues, and also Bowers Blues, that matter. But I don't think any sort of big surprises or any sort of in the front five, I think it's pretty much as you'd have expected. In the loose forwards, then Blackadder, Frizzell, Akira, Owani, Jacobson, Papilihi, Sadia, and Hosking Satutu. Again, no big surprises. In that one, I guess the only point we probably should point out here is that Ardy's got 50 caps. So congratulations on his 50 caps at the weekend, by the way. Then the next most experienced player is Frizzell with 14. And then you've got Hosking Satutu with 6, Papilihi Jacobson with 5, Akira Ryan with 4, and Ethan Blacko with 2 caps, which is it's amazing how inexperienced that loose trio is now and how... I guess COVID hasn't helped, but sort of with Kieran Reid out, obviously having retired after the last World Cup, and with Sam Kane injured, suddenly it's looking very thin from an experience point of view in that space. But again, I don't think anyone's missed out there that we'd expect.
And no out and out genuine sevens in there.
I mean Papi Lihi and Ardy would be considered sevens, I think.
I mean, like they're on the larger side of sevens, and they get used in numbers in the. Well, Ardy gets used in every position in the back row, and yep. Even Dalton can end up playing six as well. So he's played six for the Blues when they put Blake Gibson on at seven. So, I think Dalton's probably the closest to a pure number seven, and you've got Ardy, who's started off as a seven but plays anywhere.
Yeah, and then I mean. Sam Kane, is he? He's not what you'd call a jackaling seven. He's a tackling seven and a work rate seven. So yep. I think from a style point of view, it's similar there. That they don't have. Yeah, that's not something they're going for. Is having a jackaling seven per se.
And I think with the future of Test rugby, particularly in the breakdown area, I think we're going to see some changes in the next few years, particularly around the safety. Now I know this thing with that world rugby and safety, they mean well, but it kind of gets lost in transit. So what this equates to is that when high performance coaches and selectors start looking for players in what we call a PO7, I think the seven's job description has changed slightly maybe over the last couple of seasons. So hence that's why we're seeing a lot of players who are picked as generic back rowers, and they play both six and seven. So the days of seeing players like out and out Richie McCaw, a Neil Back, that sort of thing, might be in the bygone era. But it'll be interesting to see, because there are some trials around limiting the number of players who can get involved in the breakdown, and also what a jackler can and can't do. So I think we're gonna see some changes, gentlemen. You heard it here first.
I had to laugh, Bob, because it's like one of the things I've been trying to do with my son's team is it's like, okay, count how many are going into the ruck. One and two have gone, and does three and four have to go? And this is like, and now I'm picturing in an international level. Oh, hang on, how many boys are gone? And three. Oh, okay, one more can go, and one more going.
But I guess we'll probably talk about it a little bit more later on, but Hamish Watson of the Lions might be one of the last of that breed then, because he's not a big guy.
Hooper? Let's not forget our friend Mr. Hooper.
No, Hooper's more a linking seven than he is a jackling seven. He's a
ball he gets seven. A hell of a lot of turnovers for a linking seven.
I have to say this, based on all the technical abilities and skills, I would rate Hamish Watson the best number seven in the world right now. Particularly around his tackle technique. He's the only high-performance elite-level player I see who actually tackles around the waist. And boy, he gets nice and low. Absolute brutal technique. Gets right back on his feet and plays the ball. So the reality is, as far as a seven and a job description goes, it's going to be more a power-based player. Someone who can really, get involved in the collision, as opposed to play that thieving Alibaba and the 40 Thieves style sort of... rugby, for a better choice of words.
It's interesting. Effectively, you're describing what Dalton was doing at Super Rugby level, pretty exactly. much.
And I think he's tailor-made that for himself, and he works on a certain set of skills, particularly as his individual primers, I've noticed, both at Blues and at All Blacks training, where it's very specific. It's all about power. It's about knocking people over, bowling people over, and bulldozing people. So we're going to see more and more of that as we go along in the international season.
Thought you're breaking into a bit of Liam Neeson there. He's got a certain set of skills.
Anyway, I don't think any big surprises there in the loose forwards. In the halfbacks, Aaron Smith, Brad Weber have been joined by TJ Perenara, which I guess might be there's definitely a talking point around TJ. Fossey comes out and says his contract negotiations shouldn't be were potentially and shouldn't have been come out in the public. And TJ's like, no, it was serious. I wasn't actually trying to bump up my price. A little bit of having a go at it, a little popping at each other in the press, which seems a little bit interesting. But I'm sure they'll sort it out.
I'm, I have to say, I'm very, very displeased that TJ being picked. I think he should have been asked to have at least played, you know, 3 to 4 weeks of NPC, and, you know, proven his fitness. Because you have to understand, he's coming from a league where, you know, it's the competition and intensity is nowhere remotely close to what you'd expect at TESL, particularly in and around the All Blacks space. So, yeah, a bit annoyed at that. But look, end of the day, it is what it is. And we certainly had a bit of drama around Coach Ian Foster. You know, was that a telling off saying, TJ, behave yourself?
Well, it was an attempt at, and then TJ came out and had to go back at it. So it would be interesting to see how they go in camp.
This is going to be rather strange because probably the first time it's happened. Is like, I have to agree with Ian Foster on this. That was guys that consider going to league don't consider going to league because of the money. Okay, like now that the money is there in rugby, I mean, go back in time when rugby was amateur, guys went to league because there was money there. Now it's not a case of whether the money is there or not, because if you're after the money, you go to Japan, you go to France. Right, you consider playing league because you want to have a go at it. Then money is, as long as the money's not stupid, like stupid low, then you have a go at it if that's what your desire is, that's what your heart wants you to do. So I'm that was all just a ploy. I'm trying to get the contract with the NZRFU.
We'll see. I think part of it was down to that he couldn't get proper insurance that would guarantee him All Blacks money. Would only guarantee him league money if he got injured, which I think was part of the problem. But anyway, maybe it was contract negotiations. Maybe it was he couldn't get all the pieces in place. Who knows? But the first game that the All Blacks play is the next Bledisloe Cup on Saturday, the 7th of August. And the NPC, having a quick check.
We didn't go into the outside backs. We didn't talk about the outside backs.
Yeah, we'll get there. But we're talking about TJ having to play NPC before playing so you're right, the Bledisloe is on the same day as the NPC starts, but they have said that TJ will play NPC before playing, so it sounds like he might not join them for that first game. We'll just have to wait and see how it pans out. I did read that somewhere that he was going to be playing NPC. Outside backs in Bowden and Bowden Barrett, Richard Mwanga, first fives, yep, no big surprise there. In the centres, Enor, Havili, Rico, Leonard Brown, and Quinn Tapia are in there. Any kind of surprises?
I think we pretty much picked the best available. Again, the question mark, I mean, is Lester Fayanganuku still in the outer? I think he's worth a crack. And he might just get that opportunity, albeit through an injury. So I guess we'll just sort of wait and see that space.
You wouldn't say there's anything controversial about it, but I mean, you could sort of say, hey, look, Braden Enor, you could have sort of said, hey, look, go away, play a bit of NPC and then come back. It's not that you're not going to be outside the All Black scope. It's just the fact is that you probably had limited rugby time. Let's get you out there and playing a bit more. Yep. As opposed to, you know, possibly sitting on the bench, riding the pine. Because we know, generally speaking, once you get into that All Blacks environment, they don't seem to release them for NPC games. It's at a whim rather than anything regular or obvious, logical.
Maybe Enor could have had some rugby time. And same with Quintipire as well. I mean, he's still new at this level. But I guess with Quintipire especially, they'll probably want him learning the All Blacks environment.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? Because with Braden Enor, sort of similar. And it's just like, but with Braden Enor, he's already been in that All Blacks environment. So he's picked up. But with Quinn, you'd sort of like, hey, look, get a feel for the All Blacks environment and take a bit of the learnings, as they say these days, and invent the words.
And then the outside backs, Jordy, Bridge, Jordan, DMAC, and Sophie Reese there. Lester Fayanganuku, is perhaps the only one, as you say, that might be a bit disappointed, but it's difficult to say who would you drop to put him in effectively.
George Bridge.
Who
would you drop? George Bridge. He's looked a bit of out of sorts, to be honest, out in the time that he has been in the field. Whereas, you know, I sort of think with Leicester, if he's going to, instead of using him in the midfield, use him as an outside back to start with. There's no harm.
I think he's an outside back. I don't think he's a 13. I think he's a 14, not a 13. Leicester.
Yep. Well, he played a hell of a lot for the Crusaders. I know there was, you know, people that can read it and see it, did see some defensive issues in his playing in the midfield. But the reality is, he's definitely got a chance of a future in the midfield. If he can harness the type of game that he's got, and he brings it to the midfield, then you've just created another man, don't you?
I just a bit like we question Rico's distribution skills. Again, at this level, I would. With Leicester, I did the same. I put the same question mark there.
To be fair, though, I mean, with the amount of ball that the Crusaders get, he got plenty of opportunity to use those centre type skills, let's say, and I thought he actually did it quite well.
Okay.
I'm very happy with his overall skills, particularly his attacking skills. I think he's an exceptional player, and he will have a big part to play in the future of the All Blacks, particularly. There's going to be a bit more experimenting, particularly in the midfield. And I personally feel that Leicester will, in fact, play in that midfield. Not today, maybe tomorrow, but eventually he will have a decent dig in the All Blacks environment.
And that's why I was sort of saying, look, I mean, George Bridge is it. He played a few games back from injury the last couple of games. I think it might have been for the Crusaders. He's had a couple of games in the black jersey, you know, against Fiji. It's something seemed to be missing for me there for him. I'd rather see Leicester there. Outside back, you've got enough experience cover there. So to bring someone like Leicester and, you know, we've got, because of COVID and 2020 was effectively a lost year, you've got a truncated build up to the next World Cup as well. So, if you get wanting to find some, unearth some gem, some diamond in the rough, you know, you've got a shorter period to do it.
You have. I think they see George Bridge in a kind of Nick Smith, Ben Smith role as being a guy who's just too good a footballer to lead out. And I think that's where I think they see him in that.
George Bridge is no Ben Smith. He's no accountant. He might just be the bookkeeping guy rather than the accountant, I think.
Anyway, just very quickly. So just very quickly. So TJ, having recently returned from Japan, Piranara is following a progressive return to rugby program of club, then Bunnings Warehouse NPC. Finley Christie will remain with as temporary cover for the squad. Props offer and Tonga Fassi and Moody come back, and George Bauer will remain with the squad as injury cover as they return. Also, Somersoni will stick around as injury cover for us for Amua. So there's a number of extra players. So there's three extra players there sticking around as injury cover already for the initial games as well.
And now you bring up the a comment from Nocturnal about, you know, the broke NZRFU can afford to have extend this squad to 38 from 36. Hey, just on Takiaho, you know, this is we're talking about Steve. It would have been good to have him on because he did have a discussion. I can't remember if it was on Twitter or Facebook with somebody, and it's just like, you know, I didn't disagree with it. Again, you know, this is a bit of enlightened stuff. It's like Takiaho reminded the guys, and then when they sort of said, yeah, that's really true, is that of a Safa Amua, in the way that he plays the game, he's very dynamic and, you know, ball handling carry, and maybe not as fast as Zamua, but then he definitely is a lot stronger scrummager, and he's definitely a lot heavier and, you know, a bigger ball of mass going into rucks and what we've just talked about, cleaning out and stuff like that. So, although, you know, Stephen, yourself, we've all talked about the fact is that that could have been a really expensive 20 minutes for Takiaho, but, you know, actually, maybe if he carries on the upward trajectory that he has, maybe he could usurp Amua. Maybe.
Yeah, look, guys, I have a very different view on Takiaho. I think this boy is going to play a huge role in the future of the All Blacks based on what I saw, particularly his carries. I mean, you have to understand, he ran at some of the heaviest, most powerful Fijians, and it looked like they didn't even exist. He reminds me of Lou Ferrigno, the old school Incredible Hulk, you know, when he gets angry and rips off all those clothes. The original. Oh, his body position and the ability to stay square, carry in his non-dominant arm, look square, get underneath the would-be tackler. And as you know, I've been going on about these choke tackles. He gets under and he just bowls them over like ninepins. So I think, you know, this kid's going to have a very bright future. He's only going to get better and better. A couple of more NPC seasons in Super Rugby. When in time some of the senior pros, once they leave, this guy's going to become a permanent fixture. So I think the best thing he did for himself and the All Blacks is play that 20 minutes, and he sent a message.
And yeah, you know,
a couple of things I want to add to that, Cody Taylor's 34, so yes, he's only got a couple of years left. Also, if you remember, Cody Taylor was criticised as being a one-cap wonder for the game in Fiji a few years back that they had when it was played at the same time as the Super Rugby final, and so hence not all the players were available. Now, he is now a 58-cap All Black and an arguably first choice. So, you've got to – but beware of calling people one-cap wonders, even though I think Finley Christie is a two-cap wonder. I could be very much wrong.
No, I mean, and it's interesting because it's a good point. This is like out of – when we look at the Fiji series, one guy that took his opportunity and it was only 20 minutes or whatever it was of opportunity was Takiaho. He definitely, I think, took that 20 minutes or whatever, how many minutes he had on the field, and he's – basically put a stamp on the ground saying, hey, I'm here.
He is still a young guy. And so he's got time on his side as well. So that's the All Blacks squad going forwards, 36 plus three at the moment. And I guess the only two sort of big injury ones, obviously, are Sam Kane and Jack Goodhue are the two that sort of jump out there. Right, let's get on to France then, or Australia, France. Early on, we had
was it France B or France C? Allegedly.
My opinion, those comments are bullshit on Twitter, because at the end of the day, no team ever goes out with its first choice people. There's always injuries. There's always players missing. It's the team that was.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wearing the French jersey, so it was their first choice team that they had available before that game. You can't change who you're playing against, right, for Australia. So look, Australia came up 2-1. Apparently a very good game. As I say, I passed out halfway through it. Shall we talk? Is there anything you want to talk about apart from the red card? And then we'll come back to the red card and how it's been treated after the game.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think when we look at that Australian side, as you've actually mentioned, I mean, if we're talking about a France ABC side, then Australia didn't have all their strongest players there either. And I'm not referring to the ones that Stephen Harris talks about that are playing like your Skeletons and like in Europe and like. I'm talking, they had a few injured players that make a difference. But, you know, Stephen and I made a bold call before the second test, and this is like, Australia will win that by 20 points. And it's interesting because that second test and even the third test, they're really leaving a lot of points out there on the field. They get opportunities and then they'll drop a pass, whatever. So they're creating a lot of opportunities, just not finishing them. So they could have won that series a lot easier than they did.
Yeah, look, overall, the quality of rugby, when I mean the quality of rugby, was actually quite poor. There was a lot of forced and unforced errors, as you rightly mentioned, a lot of missed opportunities. And also tactically, you know, sometimes you go, what the, you know, why are they not taking the points? You know, why are they trying to make it hard for themselves? So from a quality control point of view, as far as test rugby goes, it wasn't the best. It did have flashes of brilliance. However, what it did do was it created a very, very exciting photo finish. And I think that glossed over some of these obvious shortcomings. So, you know, Wallabies have the All Blacks first up at the Fortress Eden Park. I think we know what's coming, gentlemen. I think we know what's coming. So it's from a quality point of view, I felt that there was a lot to be decided, but general population and the fans, particularly the online community, was raving at how close this was, and maybe that's what a little bit of test footy first up needs, where you have, you know, rather than playing a tier two nation, playing a tier one nation, where we kind of even everything up and we have closer matchups. You're not going to have perfect rugby. You will have imperfect rugby, and they'll learn and they'll take some form out of this. So let's wait and see. But I'm really looking forward to Eden Park.
Well, let's first again. This is the only tier one versus tier one series due to COVID, right? All the other games have been tier one versus tier two, and the Lions hasn't kicked off yet. So that's why I think this series got a lot more attention than it would perhaps normally have done, because there was no other competitive rugby, really. All the other games, Argentina versus Wales, to be fair.
I disagree with you, Paul. For some reason, France-Australia test series actually always seems to be not bad. A decent series seems to come out of it, or something comes out of it. There's usually pretty good rugby comes out of it for some reason. The other thing is, I don't believe it's actually... I think if you look at it, when the Lions play... There's always a lack of tier one matches on, because the likes of Ireland, Scotland, and Wales aren't going to come play the All Blacks while they've got half their squad away, or for Scotland maybe one or two away with the Lions. So you're realistically speaking, yeah, COVID's had an impact, absolutely, but I think also the bigger impact's been the fact that there's a Lions series on.
Yep. Okay. I guess Italy haven't toured. And then also the other one.
Italy, that's the idea. Yeah, Italy's the obvious one. Would you count Italy as a tier one, though?
Well, technically, but no.
Technically.
But they aren't a TV draw or an audience draw in the same way as the other tier one teams are. So, look, I think it's got a lot of attention. It's been a very, as you say, they've been close, tight games, which have been fantastic. From an excitement point of view of the spectacle, has been good, even if the quality of some of the rugby hasn't been, and there's been mistakes within it. But I can understand why people are raving about it, because they have been close games, so the spectacle is good, and it's been and it was a decided game as well. It's not like a dead rubber, the last one. It was 1-1. They won 2-1 as well. So I think from all that point of view, I think it's played out perfectly. We had a last second score in the first one with France messing it up. The second game was close, so it's been a cracking series. Anyway,
I think it's been good for Australian rugby as well. I mean, I read somewhere that fact that it actually outrated the AFL game that was on at the time. So that's good. I mean, again, even though, you know, obviously they lost the second test, but it went to a decider, which helps build interest. They didn't make an Australian team didn't make it to the Super Rugby Trans-Tasman final. But again, there was still, because of the closeness in their internal competition, that's starting to build some interest. So, you know, it's all helping with the to rebuild the Phoenix from the ashes type scenario that is Australian rugby.
Oh, I personally believe Australian rugby is on the up. It's still got a long way to go.
Well, it's got a long way to go, but
I think it's hit the corner. Bottom and it has hit bottom and is heading in the right direction. I think a lot of that's down to having a TV company covering it that actually likes rugby and doesn't talk negatively about it all the time.
Dan's a good mate.
Corey Betting got a red card. Now, obviously a big hoo-ha at the time. Because essentially of the reaction by the French player rather than necessarily, to my mind, what actually happened as part of the collision. And there is an argument that people say, people say, look, how the French player reacts didn't alter how the referees looked at the situation. No, but it can make them look at it when they wouldn't have looked at it necessarily, from that point of view. So simulation is something that needs to be sorted out. The guy held the other side of his head that then got hit, which is just so.
He held the top of his face, and he got hit down here.
He held his left cheekbone when he actually the contact was somewhere on the neck and right chin. So it's bad Paul Newman sort of.
So there was Hollywood part of that. Now, Nocturne Wright says the Hollywood scores it was actually a yellow. Well, let's run through the guidelines then. Was there contact with the head? Yes. Was there a sudden drop by the player? No. Yes, he was bending over and he was down it a bit, but there wasn't a sudden drop. There, so look, I don't think that the referees, I think referees followed what they were told to follow on the pitch.
Let's put our cards on the table though, Paul. I think let's put the cards on the table because as we mentioned before, we have got a little bit of a group chat going with the guys that come on the show, and at the end of the day, what have we got on there? Seven guys on there,
yep.
and there wasn't really a debate within the group. We all thought it's a red card. We all, to a T, thought it was a red card. We tried to say, can we get any mitigation? But the reality was there was none. As I made a comment, it's just like, it just feels like, I'm not saying that this was the case, but it just feels like that with all the 90% of social media, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, or whatever, was basically, the ref's got it wrong, and it's just like, it shouldn't have been the card even, or it should have been a yellow, or blah, 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 right? And it's just like, the judiciary's almost, and World Rugby has sort of heard that and gone, oh, shit, we better not make it a red card. But the reality is that the protocols that you've just outlined, and the guys that actually know the protocols go, according to the protocols, that's a red card.
Now, I've not gone as far as the judiciary yet, but I can. Anything you want to say before we get to judiciary?
So, the high tackle framework, the World Rugby's high tackle framework, has been in operation since 2018. So nothing new. I've studied this for the last 4.5 years. I have an alternate framework which is called safe tackle framework. But I'm not going to get into all that. For me, the real danger in this is, 9 out of 10 people in the rugby public now have been given the endorsement to say that it's okay for players to enter into a tackle round about this region, because now there's an official document which the judiciary has said no, it didn't meet the threshold of the high tackle framework. Yeah, whereas their own officials on game day, after looking at different angles from 26 different cameras, said it did. So I have two key issues here. One, Ben O'Keefe, I've been the biggest critic of referees. I feel sorry for the guy. I really do, because he's been thrown under the bus along with the rest into the scrap heap.
Let's just bring up the thing. So there's a couple things I want to say here, because we're talking about judiciary. So first off is Cora Betty comes on, and as you can see here, the player Marika Corbetta admitted to technically committing an act of foul play worthy of a red card. So he's admitted it's a red card, and he's happy with it. That's the first piece. And then the bit that I that really gets me surprised is
grind your gears.
Just totally confused. Well, that bit grinds my gears. In fact, someone admits it's red, and then you say it's not. You're like, well, what the? That just doesn't make sense.
I just killed someone. Hey, yeah, now you're innocent. Where you go?
And then the second piece is here that through the contact to the chest and neck was incidental by Corabetti. Now, where in anything is of the laws is whether it's incidental or not?
We've known for a long time that.
Who cares?
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't matter whether it's intentional or not. If it's contact to the head, it's red card. We've known this now for a while. So,
what this says is this gives an open endorsement to teams who are, you know, willfully and deliberately practicing this technique where they target the shoulder line. The reality is there's always going to be secondary contact. And furthermore, we now have a formal judicial document by the World Rugby saying, look, if you get secondary contact to the head and if you lose your teeth or have to go to the dentist or get concussed, it's okay. So long as the initial hit is round about here, it's fully legal. Now, high-performance coaches, and I'm going to be very critical of Dave Rennie here. He is someone who advocates this type of tackle technique, which is called the choke tackle. My personal and professional opinion, I think the choke tackle is the biggest blight in the modern game. It needs to be outlawed. It needs to be taken out. What needs to happen is we need to see an active lowering of the tackle height from shoulder to sternum, i.e. my program, which is the Safe Tackle Framework or Safe Tackle Line. And also keep in mind, gentlemen, Marika Koroibiti had 22 meters, a good 22 meters, to make up his mind as to where he was going to enter into the tackle. He made a decision to go round about here on that chin line. The officials had, they had their say, they went through the protocol. And this, to me, is just spineless confusion, caving into social media. But I have to say one thing, though. This red card scenario is not going to work. We have to come up with an alternate sanction. Again, I'm going back to my framework, the orange card, where unless it's an outright act of violence or foul play, reserve the red card for it and then go to judiciary and sort it out. But what World Rugby have now done is created even more confusion, and they've given an endorsement that, hey, it's okay. You can target the higher area of the body, i.e. the shoulder, so long as it's secondary contact and it's incidental. It's fine. Let's just pretend it didn't happen. That is what has happened.
Yep. Now, in here, Nocturnal's talking about the fact that it was first contact was below the head and carried on to the head was below. Now, looking at the framework, which I brought up for you here, if we just zoom in.
You might want to blow it up full screen.
I will try to. The high tackle says shoulder or head degree of danger. There's nothing here about whether it's whether it starts there or not. It's about just whether you hit. Now, mitigation in this bottom corner, bring it up, it's a bit blurry, but it says contact is indirect, starts somewhere on the body and then slips or moves up, resulting in minor contact to the head or neck. Now, the hitting the body first, then going up, is all about whether it's minor contact. If it's minor contact, then there's mitigation. If there's hard contact, which there was in this case, there is no mitigation. That is not mitigation if it does it, that it starts somewhere else. It doesn't matter where it starts if it's still a high degree of danger. So, yeah, that mitigation doesn't count nocturnal. And again, poor explanation of the high tackle framework by commentators doesn't help in this situation.
Well, that's because they don't know the ins and out of it. And there's just far too much confusion. And what players and coaches and referees and people like ourselves, commentators, we all have a very different view of this. And because World Rugby think that everyone is going to spend 3 hours of their life reading this whole framework, which is not the case, this is why we're having this confusion. So we have to simplify, give it more clarity, and it's got to be pragmatic. You know, this is like trying to herd cats who are never going to fall in line. It is impractical. It's a joke. It really is. And this, you know, this does my head in every time we have to go over this. And for how long do we have to keep having these conversations? I mean, every year an incident like this comes up and we have this grand old debate and then it gets swept under the carpet. And World Rugby in the hope that, look, she'll be all right. So this needs to change. And some common sense has to prevail.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think Steve Harris has sort of mentioned this a couple of times, and I'm buying into this more and more. And the fact is that just do the league thing. Just do it. You have an incident on field. It goes on report, and then it's dealt with off the field. They've got a chance of at least making it consistent what the hell they decide. And then people don't rave on about the impact that it had on the game. You can still have a red card for intentional foul play, but, you know, for anything, yeah, it's like take it to a match report sort of scenario and go from there. But, you know, like the whole thing, it's confused, as you've just alluded to, it's just confusing people more and more, whereas the laws of the game, the guidelines for the games state one thing, and then the actions actually show another.
Yeah, look, red, orange, yellow.
We're nearly an hour in already, guys. But yeah, we I think we all agree that the referee's been thrown under the bus. The TMO and the ARs have got away lucky because their name's not being mentioned. And Ben O'Keefe is taking all the flak, which is harsh. And I don't think he should miss out or be punished in any way. He did what he was told to do, Paul Dunley. Yep. LB the Sav says there's no black and white in law, rugby laws, so I'll be surprised. Yeah, well, look, it's we have a game where basically players are told to cheat until the referee tells them not to. So, yeah, that's what we get. And it is not a surprise.
Paul, one thing I have to say is now with all the hoo-ha around concussion and head safety, you know, we can't have one foot here and one foot there. We have to come up with a very easy, simple, understandable framework. So at the moment, that's not there. And this is only going to get worse. So I'll guarantee you, with guys like Lockie Swinton coming into I think one of the viewers, it was Nocturnal, made mention about it. I'll guarantee you there will be cards. There will be a plethora of cards. Or conversely, World Rugby will go to its shell and cave right in, and we're going to see some tremendous hits. We're going to see people get hurt and no cards issued. So it's going to be a very interesting period, walking on eggshells.
What's going to be really interesting is one thing we've talked about is that New Zealand referees, and funnily enough, the judiciary in this were all New Zealanders, have tried to find mitigation whenever possible with high hits and try not to give out red cards. Whereas it's an Aussie referee, funnily enough, giving out a red card, and then the New Zealand, and I say three Kiwis, have then gone no. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in November when the All Blacks go up north and amongst European refs and European judiciaries and see what happens then.
Final word on it. Doesn't help in the game with the lack of consistency, right? Because yeah, exactly. I can't remember the French try scorer scores the try with the elbow in the throat.
Yeah, arm away from the body. You can't
It doesn't matter whether it's away from the body or not. There's the arm and it's into the throat.
Well, no, if your arm's here holding the ball, then... But
it doesn't matter.
Well,
no.
Okay,
you've got to deal with it. You say, no, you can't carry the ball like that. Just like you can't tackle like that, you can't carry the ball like that.
Exactly. So my counter-argument is, had the bloke not tackled in upright position and had he not put his hand up, he would have lost his teeth. So it's whether that, so this would then become incidental because it's a reflex action. Yeah. You see what I mean? Anyway.
Moving on from that then, because I think it's clear as mud as it was before we started. Other international rugby from this week. Actually, two things. Simon Gose says we should have a referee as part of the commentary team. No. To be allowed to commentate, you should have to take a referee's course.
Yeah.
That would be my one. So actually know what the hell you're talking about. And then secondly, Simon says, good that we've got there's a new sports radio station that can that they've got something to talk about this week because of this. Have either of you guys listened to SENZ yet?
Never will.
Okay.
There's a good reason. Well, it's on AM.
I thought you were going to say it's because they sacked the other guy. No, okay, it's because it's AM. All right.
I've actually been asked to come on for 20 minutes particularly to talk about this high tackle framework and the red card. So, and cool. Speaking of AM, I have no issues because it's 1476 AM in Auckland, so nice and easy. I just tune on this.
Oh, no, but the problem is that you always get interference on bloody AM network. What? I don't understand it. How the hell can you not have an FM bloody frequency?
That's where you get an old school analog built in 1969.
So have you actually listened to any of it yet, Boa, or have you just been invited?
Well, I have listened to a bit. Look, they've got some, you know, they've got a staff that have cast, you know, guys like Brendan McCullum's on there doing the breakfast. Yep. You know, it's interesting. So only time will tell how much of a listenership or audience they garner. And you know, hopefully they come out and speak about most of the issues in an open, candid manner. And that'll probably get the communal engagement. So I guess we should wait and see, Paul.
Yep. And it is available as a phone app as well, but I've not tried the phone app yet. I've not listened to it. So we'll see. Generally, I don't listen to, I listen to podcasts rather than radio. So yeah, we'll see. Well, I might give it a go at some point. I like this sign. Yeah. The only downside with the station is there's way too many Sky people on it.
That's such a valid comment. Such a valid comment. Because at the end of the day, let's face it, one of the issues that we've had with Sky shows in general, that ones that we watch, they're not very controversial. They don't really push the boat out very far in terms of opinion. They're pretty much toe the party line type of shows. So if they do that on Sky, what's the chances of them doing it on a radio show?
Well, they'll lose their Sky job as well. So hence they won't. So, but look, Jason Pine, before he resigned, did most of the hiring for this, and he's a Sky football commentator. So unsurprising that he would he's hired a whole bunch of Sky people. So people he knows and gets on with.
I think it's just more the fact that there's a shallow pool to choose from, tell you the truth, reality is that where do those people that are on Sky come from? They came from radio. So Piney knows them. Not just from Sky, but because he's been in radio for so long, he's known that back in the radio days, now they're at Sky. And yeah, so it's just the circle, merry-go-round.
Yeah, there are very few. You're quite right. It's a cricket question, so we'll leave it to another time. But Aaron does say, will Brendan interview Chris Cairns? I don't know the background behind that, but the Swing from the Hit podcast can deal with that one.
For a few diamonds. Or dollars. Or pennies.
We've kind of run out of time. We'll just run through some of the other international stuff that happened at the weekend. Simon, at the top of the show, let us know that Algeria,
Burkina Faso,
Ivory Coast, Kenya, Namibia, Senegal, Uganda, and Zimbabwe are all through to the next round of the African qualifiers. So congratulations to all of them. And we'll see. I mean, I think we're all expecting Namibia to get through, but they did lose a game quite surprisingly. There's no Kenya. Oh, you know, Kenya's there as well. So I don't think we've lost anybody, any major teams there yet. At the weekend, Argentina beat Wales 11-33. So good win by Argentina away from home there. South Africa A lost to the Bulls 14-17. The British and Irish Lions beat the Stormers 3-49. And of course, congratulations to Samoa, who beat Tonga 15-37 to win 28-79 on aggregate to qualify for the Rugby World Cup.
On away goals.
And boundaries apparently. So congrats. So that they're through there. That means that Tonga will be facing the I've gone blank. Who is it?
Tonga straight into the pool. I think they'll be pooled in with
No, they're going to go through a ripper charge type scenario.
Yeah, they have to play the Cook Islands and South Korea.
So, this weekend.
Yeah, Korea. That was the one. Korea.
This weekend, they are playing the Cook Islands. That is part of a double header at Counties Manukau. First off, they're going to have the Counties Power Heat playing Bay of Plenty in the Farrah Palmer Cup at 2:35 kickoff. And that's followed by the Tonga versus Cook Islands at 5:35. So double header there at Navigation Home Stadium in Pocono
Saturday. That's a bit of a setup. That's a bit of a setup for the old Cook Islanders.
The the Cook Islanders have lost to Tasman and the New Zealand in the 20s in the last 2 weekends. They've had a couple of warm-up games, which is good to see.
But nothing's like, I mean, like, yeah, playing Tonga playing Samoa is, you know, it's still, I mean, like, you look at the intensity in those games, and it, although obviously the score blows out in that second half, Tonga puts up a decent decent fight early on.
Oh, look, Tonga expects to win this one. I say the Cook Islands have lost to the New Zealand under-20s and to Tasman.
Yeah.
If they've beaten those two, you could then say, oh, look, they're rolling into this with an undercooked.
Bit of confidence. Yeah.
A bit of confidence, yeah. But they're not undercooked because they've lost in the last two. You put them against more intense opposition, they might have just had more injuries. So only $10 to get in, folks, for that, which I think is a great deal for those two games. So, yeah, head and kids under 14 are free. Thank you to Pack and Save Pocono for paying for that. So there you go. So that's happening this weekend. The Farrah Palmer Cup, there are, whilst I've not applied for my NPC and Farrah Palmer Cup media passes yet, but I might try and get along to those two, as it is a World Cup qualifier. Other games this weekend, we've got North Harbour playing Tasman, Hawke's Bay up against Northland, Waikato against Canterbury, Manawatu versus Taranaki, the Counties against Bay of Plenty, and then on Sunday, Otago versus Auckland in the Farrah Palmer Cup, folks. Obviously, we're running out of time, otherwise we would spend a little bit more time talking about that. It kicked off last weekend with three games with expected results, to be honest with you. Auckland, Canterbury and Wellington winning.
Oh. Huge shout out to Eden Rugby Club. First appearance at the Gallagher Shield final in 99 years and, you know, well-deserved, and an outstanding game against the Red Hot Favourites, Grammar Tech. And I thought, Eden, they played to the conditions, nice and low body positions, just one out, you know, one back carriers, but they did the business. And they played smart rugby. They played territory. Eden Park was an irrigated surface, I have to say, with the deluge, which is downpouring. So well done to Eden. Rich, fully deserved winners of 2021 Gallagher Shield for the Auckland Senior Club Rugby Premiership.
I'd have to say, though, Bo, you're like, whilst Grammar, if on a fine day, Grammar might have gone in as favourites. I think with the conditions as they were, I'd think that you would have put your money on Eden to win that, because that their tight five in particular, massive, absolutely huge. And, you know, you sort of think they'll run out of puff or something, but they didn't. They went the full 80. And as long as they went the full 80 and could tuck the ball up their jumpers, they, you know, they got the job done and played to the conditions, as you alluded to.
So what I might try and do is see if we can have a maybe do a special show on Thursday evening, see if we can get some Stephen Harris along as well and do a special Club Rugby Finals Driving Mall show. And because I say, to give them a little bit of justice with that one.
They just wanted it more on the day. You know, that's how I took it. Because, you know, conditions were atrocious. It was a dour game. One thing I have to say is Eden, their body position, both in attack and defense, was nice and low, whereas the Grammar boys were very high. And they paid the price, because every time they went into contact, the ball popped out. Ding! So basically, rugby 101. Yeah.
Marisope.
Simon Hughes says, is there any point playing the Farrah Palmer Cup at Eden Park? Well, look, last weekend it was club's final day, so it was one of three games or four games being held at Eden Park. So, but normally...
Yeah. It was, Look, not I mean, really because... just to, I mean, as Paul alluded to, it was part of the Gallagher Shield final day there. So if the weather wasn't so crap, because it was a shocker, you usually get to the Gallagher Shield, you get about 10,000 people rocking up, depending on who the club's playing are. Let's say it was a Ponsonby versus, I don't know, Marist or someone like that. You end up with about 10,000 people turning up to watch that game. So it's a shame that the weather was crap. You probably would have got a few more people there, even just independence, not independence, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, independent of the Thorabama Cup. Yeah,
so, no, independent of the teams who are like in the Gallagher Shield final.
Oh, I see.
So yeah,
whoever was playing. But quite right. Look, Thorabama Cup games in big stadiums. Look, I mean, NPC games in big stadiums are a bit of a waste of time. In all honesty, Eden Park is too big for Auckland to play in. At the end of the day, but they do because, hey, they can afford to, and B, it's got good camera positions for Sky.
I was just going to say that one of the problems you got, like Farapama Cup's a good example where they could take it to Waitakere Trust, for example. Yep. But the problem is that you don't get your camera angles, and as we see with Canterbury Rugby down at Orange Theory, you know, it's watching the game at time can get frustrating from in front of the on the couch, I should say, because the angles that they show are just horrible sometimes.
So, yes, that's the only reason for being at the big stadiums. I wouldn't be surprised if we'll see teams like Waikato, Wellington, maybe even Otago moving out of the big stadiums and playing in smaller stadiums going forward because of the cost and the savings of it. I know on the... The Waikato is their centenary year this year, which is one of the reasons why they're playing at FMG. I would not be surprised at all if Waikato move out of FMG Stadium next year.
Yeah, there are plenty of communal esplanades and, you know, smaller stadiums where you pick it out and it's easy access to the community. And, you know, it's going to create a better environment. I mean, in Auckland, I can think of, you know, four or five really good venues, and I think that's what needs to happen. Rather than playing Eden Park West half the time, it's like playing in Ghost Town. So to me, it makes zero sense. And it goes completely against what they're trying to achieve, which is community rugby with communal spirit.
Okay, that's what they should be trying to achieve. Whether that's actually what Auckland Rugby are trying to achieve is a different ballgame. Plus also, I would be sad if it moved out of Eden Park because the food they provide in the media box is the best food in the country. I'll be that I've come across.
We wouldn't know. So all we hear is how expensive and overpriced, how overpriced the hot dogs and chips are in the general stand. So Paul must be doing something right.
The satay sticks and the tempura prawns are very cheap and nice in the
free.
Oh dear. We had a bunch of other stuff to talk about. We're going to talk about the Lions test this coming weekend and as well, but I don't think we've really got time to do it justice. I will be that'll obviously be an early hours of Sunday morning game at 4 a.m. Sunday morning, so I'll be up at that time and doing a post-match reaction straight after that game. Springboks versus the British and Irish Lions first test. So do join me for that one. Guys, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure as always. And as I say, maybe we'll try and do a club rugby finals game on Thursday. And folks, keep an eye out for the Tasman social media going forwards because the the legendary Marty Banks webpage person is now the Tasman Marcos social media manager. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. And Aaron, I'll be honest with you, the only time I've ever had a beer at the rugby as a kind of media person was for the win by when Waikato won their final, where we all got one bottle of beer. So hardly bigging it up, but hey, they did manage to find at least one beer on that day when Waikato got promoted. But thank you very much, Boa.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
And
well, those brown people look the same to him.
And I will see you all, as I say, if not before, straight after the Lions versus the Springboks.